evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 28, 2021. The chief of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says lack of services in South Sudan has discouraged refugees and internally displaced persons from returning to their homes.
I saw many returnee women in Bentiu. You know, they told me, we're okay with security for our villages. But the problem is we have land issues. We don't go to, our land is not there anymore. And, you know, the kids need to go to school, we need health centers, and none of this is present.
And some residents and traders in South Sudan's capital, Juba, call on the city council to collect garbage from the town.
The rubbish has been poured next to my house. When rain comes, all the rubbish enters my compound. There is no place to step. The whole place smells bad.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The head of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, says the slow pace of the implementation of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement is discouraging refugees from returning home. Grandi says many refugees and internally displaced persons are not able to return to their homes because their plots of land and homes have been occupied by other people. He says lack of government services has also discouraged many refugees and IDPs from returning to their homes. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Addressing a news conference in Juba today, Filippo Grandi said many refugees and displaced people who are willing to return to their villages are unable to do so largely because their plots of land and homes have been occupied by other people. He says many women he met in Bentiu told him the government must first address the issue of land grabbing.
I saw many returnee women in Bentiu. You know, they told me, we're okay with security for our villages. But the problem is we have land issues. We don't go to, our land is not there anymore. And, you know, the kids need to go to school, we need health centers, and none of this is present. So they move to the city, they move to other places. They don't go back to their areas of origin.
Grandi says some refugees and IDPs are reluctant to return to their villages because of a lack of services. He says although a lot of positive changes has occurred in Western Equatoria and other parts of the country, the situation remains worrisome in other areas. Grandi says he is asking the government to come up with some solutions.
How can we create conditions in this country for people to return, whether they are displaced in the POC a few kilometers from home or whether they are hundreds of kilometers in Ethiopia or in Uganda? What do they need? First of all, they need security. This is still their biggest concern. So the situation is still fluid, you know it very well. But this is an important thing that we need to work on.
Grandi is also urging aid agencies operating in the country to shift their focus from providing humanitarian assistance to funding developmental projects.
I'm asking them, please, take a bit of a risk. If we don't invest in development, in education, in employment, in agriculture, in roads and transport, even if the areas are a little bit more fragile, we will not get this area out of conflict.
Grandi says the parties to the peace deal are dragging their feet on implementing parts of the plan. He notes that local conflicts continue to threaten the peace process in part because there is no development in most areas of the country. The UNHCR chief says he was not able to visit certain areas, including Maban, where his humanitarian agency hosts thousands of refugees, but he saw many internally displaced persons returning home.
So there is a return movement. There is a peace agreement. It's not perfect. It still is slow in being implemented, but it is there. Moreover, in the country that is very closely linked to your country, in Sudan itself, also there is a peace process between the government and the various armed groups. A peace agreement was signed here with most of them just a few months ago, here in Juba. And, you know, most of the displacement A lot of the displacement in these two countries is across. There are Sudanese refugees coming here, South Sudanese gone to Sudan.
This is the second time the UNHCR chief has visited South Sudan since 2017. Grandi met South Sudan's leaders Monday to discuss possible solutions to enable the return of more than 2.2 million people who fled their country when conflict broke out in Juba in 2013. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still on refugee issues, the UN Refugee Agency is appealing for $100 million US dollars to provide protection and support for thousands of African refugees who are risking their lives trying to reach and cross the Mediterranean Sea. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Escalating conflicts and violence in Africa's Sahel region and new displacement in the eastern Horn of Africa are causing increasing numbers of people to flee across the Sahara Desert. Many subsequently embark on dangerous sea journeys across the Mediterranean to Italy in search of asylum. The UN Refugee Agency reports at least 1,064 people died or disappeared in the central and western Mediterranean Sea in 2020. The agency has verified the deaths of about 1,800 people on the land journey across the Sahara. It says that's just the tip of the iceberg, as it is not possible to collect data on the missing. Vincent Costel, the UNHCR Special Envoy for the Central Mediterranean situation, says refugees and migrants recount harrowing tales of brutality and abuse along their journeys. The main risk people face, he says, is that of extortion from smugglers who very quickly become traffickers.
We heard from many women that they have experienced rape several times along the route. So risk of extortion, risk of labor exploitation, sexual exploitation, rape, and just murder. Some people are just abandoned in the desert in total neglect without food and water.
The UNHCR's $100 million strategic action plan and appeal covers 25 countries that are related to the movements of refugees and migrants. Costel says the aim is to assist the refugees along their way. It also seeks to lessen their need to embark on dangerous journeys on land and sea.
We may not be able to stop dangerous journey, but we do not believe in their inevitability. It is almost too late for us to intervene when people arrive in Libya or in the Western Sahara. Investment in better services and in protection must take place along the route and not only in coastal states.
Costel says money will be used to help refugees access education and livelihoods in countries of asylum. Priority will be given to provide protection for refugees in remote locations and to give cash assistance to vulnerable refugees in urban settings. The UNHCR is appealing to countries to strengthen safe and legal pathways for refugees, including through family reunification, which is a right under international law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Some residents and traders in South Sudan's capital, Juba, say the city council is doing very little to collect garbage from markets and streets. Some traders say they pay monthly fees for garbage collection and are wondering why the city council is not using the money for its intended purposes. The chief executive officer at the Juba City Council says his office has few equipment to manage garbage collection in the city. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Taking a walk through the streets of Juba, one will often find heaps of rubbish in sacks piled high in the middle of the road, including in marketplaces and in some residential areas. Aisha Aleju, a young mother who breastfeeds her baby and resides next to Nyakran Market, says traders have been uploading garbage at a dumping site located right next to her home.
The rubbish has been poured next to my house. When rain comes, all the rubbish enters my compound. There is no place to step. The whole place smells bad. My children fall sick often. You lose appetite to eat food and you can't sleep even if you cover yourself. All because of the bad smell. Let these people help us and take away the rubbish.
Alejo says piles of rotting garbage sitting week after week in the streets of Juba could easily lead to an outbreak of cholera and other diseases. Masitasha, who works at a saloon in the Nyakran market, says she has lost several clients all because of trash dumped next to her shop. Tasha says years ago, Juba was a clean town, but since last year, the Juba City Council has not been doing its work.
Starting from last year and this year, I can see the management of Juba City Council is not good like before. And I don't know the reason, because we are paying money every month. And this rubbish or garbage is near us. Like me, I always offer my service to big people, even those who work in offices of government and whatever. But these days, I'm losing customers because some of them, they don't want to hear that bad smell. Actually, when they come, even if they wear the mask, they cannot manage to stay in my salon.
Tasha says she does not understand why the council does not collect garbage from the streets and marketplaces when traders and residents pay monthly garbage collection fees. Christine Kizer, a businesswoman from Kenya who sells food in Nyakran Market, says she has lost most of her customers because of piles of rubbish dumped next to her place of business. She's calling on the South Sudan government to take its cue from her country's government, which sends out garbage trucks every day to pick up garbage along city streets.
They can pass everywhere with the car, They see where is the wasaka, they carry that rubbish, they take it. But if they are going to leave that wasaka, we are going to die. Because all people, they are united there in that wasaka. They are going in the wrong coin, that wasaka. And for us, we are here nearby, that wasaka. We're smelling, don't you hear my voice? Now I'm sick because of that wasaka.
Reverend Martin Simon Wani, Chief Executive Officer for the Juba City Council, says the council has a total of 10 trucks to collect the garbage from all residential and commercial areas. Reverend Wani says that's not enough to meet public demand. Wani confirms that the council collects monthly fees from business owners, but he says the total cost is peanut compared to the total costs of picking up garbage in the city. But he says the council is working on it.
We are even talking to our Department of Environment Sanitations, at least especially for our customers in the markets, because some of them are regular in payment of their garbage fee, which is paid monthly, of course. But you see, the cost of the garbage management, again, is another problem, because we are hiring most of the trucks from the market.
A receipt seen by South Sudan in Focus shows the city council charges 3,650 South Sudanese pounds each month from every business shop in Juba. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, health experts in U.S. predict the COVID-19 death toll in the United States would surpass 500,000 by February 20. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue?
First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give out what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue, and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue, and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The new head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention predicted Wednesday that the COVID-19 death toll in the United States would surpass 500,000 by February 20th. And in the United Kingdom, Britain reached the grim milestone this week of 100,000 coronavirus deaths, making it one of the worst affected countries in the world. For VOA News, Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
86-year-old Gordon Bonner says he is lost in a hinterland of despair and desolation. It's 9 months since Muriel, his wife of 63 years, died from COVID-19. He was called to her bedside for the final moments.
And I sat for the next hour and watched Muriel drown in her own body fluids. It was the most harrowing experience of my life. And it will haunt me. And I'll tell you why. Such was her fight for oxygen that she was sucking at the air and I can still see her face now, and her lips formed a perfect circle as if she was sucking through a straw.
A haunting account of loss and grief, emotions that have touched families across the country. Britain, Tuesday, became the first European country to report 100,000 coronavirus deaths. 25,000 of those have occurred in the past 3 weeks. It now has the highest coronavirus death rate per capita in the world. Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Wednesday he shared the nation's grief.
I and the government take full responsibility for all the actions I have taken, we've taken during this pandemic to fight this disease. And yes, Mr. Speaker, there will indeed be a time when we must learn the lessons of what has happened.
Johnson announced an extension of school closures and the enforced quarantine of travellers arriving from high-risk countries. Critics say he's done too little, too late. Critics, including opposition Labour Party leader Keir Starmer, say he's done too little, too late.
The Prime Minister was slow into the first lockdown last March. He was slow in getting protective equipment to the front line, slow to protect our care homes, slow on testing and tracing, slow into the second lockdown in the autumn, slow to change the Christmas mixing rules, slow again into this third lockdown.
Many scientists blame underinvestment in the National Health Service. Lawrence Young is an infectious diseases expert at the University of Warwick.
We suffered from not having an adequate public health infrastructure in this country. We didn't get test, trace and isolate right, and that's still a big challenge for this country. So keeping a lid on infections by effective testing, tracing and then encouraging people to isolate is really important. And we didn't get border control right.
While Britain leads Europe in coronavirus deaths, it is way ahead in its vaccination programme. Close to 7 million people have received their first vaccine doses. Again, Lawrence Young.
And it should mean that come March time, we're in a much stronger position in terms of being able to review the current lockdown restrictions.
But there are growing concerns of a vaccine shortage. Drug firms AstraZeneca and Pfizer warned the European Union this week of delays as production systems are scaled up to meet demand. The EU has threatened to block exports of vaccines produced in Europe. Meanwhile, the British government says the public should be prepared for further bad news. Chris Whitty is Britain's chief medical officer.
Unfortunately, we're going to see quite a lot more deaths over the next few weeks before the effects of the vaccines begin to be felt.
So, tragically, thousands more families will have to endure the grief of losing loved ones before their time. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Still on COVID, African officials say they are still struggling to ensure vaccine access to the continent, which has seen more than 3.4 million confirmed cases of COVID-19. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The head of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says officials are working in a number of ways to obtain more than 300 million vaccine doses over the next year. Africa's seen 3.4 million confirmed cases since the virus arrived last February. Since then, says Dr. John Nkengasong, health facilities across the vast continent have conducted 30 million tests, the bulk of them in 10 countries, which includes South Africa, which is the continent's coronavirus hotspot, plus Ethiopia, Nigeria, Kenya, Zambia, and Uganda. Just under 500 labs across the continent are participating in testing, and he named four countries that have recently begun vaccinations: Morocco, Egypt, the Seychelles, and Guinea. But, he noted, much, much more needs to be done. And, he added, the private sector is also pitching in, with telecoms giant MTN this week donating $25 million to the African Union's efforts to secure vaccines for the continent's 3 million healthcare workers.
That's a great initiative. It speaks to the power of partnership and what the private sector can do, step up to the plate and do that. We call on other parties, other private sector to step up and work with us so that we can continue to fight this pandemic, especially with vaccines.
Vaccines, Nkengasong stressed, are his top priority. In addition to the AU's efforts with American and British pharmaceutical companies, he said the AU has signed confidential disclosures with Russian, Chinese, and Cuban vaccine producers to look into whether those products will work. One question that has also plagued African health officials, especially in South Africa, is whether the existing approved vaccines can work on the very contagious 501V2 variant, which was reported in South Africa. Dr. Salim Abdul Karim, head of South Africa's coronavirus task force, told state television that he is hopeful.
If I was to speculate and guess, I would estimate that it's quite likely that the vaccine will work, given that the other vaccines work against this variant.
Nkengasong also questioned the effectiveness of blanket travel bans from certain countries. Earlier this week, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a ban on travelers from South Africa because of the 501V2 variant. Nkengasong.
We should not be banning people because of the geographic origin, but we should be encouraging people to travel with a negative test. And if we do the negative, we have a common and standardized policy with negative traveling with a negative test, then the issue of being more specific with a variant is off the table, because if you are negative for COVID, you are negative for COVID. I mean, you are not negative for COVID only for certain variants and then positive for that specific variant.
The Cameroonian virologist also broke from COVID-19 talk for a moment to evoke the memory of former Tanzanian President Julius Nyerere, South Africa's first black president Nelson Mandela, and Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie, three of the continent's leading lights in calling for African unity and self-sufficiency. He warned, if we do not fight this as a collective of a continent, we will be doomed. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
While COVID-19 kept much of the world inside for the last year, South African folk musician Vusi Mlasela says he hopes his latest album can lift people's spirits. VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to Mlasela and filed this report.
In his decades-long career, South African folk musician Vusi Mlasela has performed with top acts around the world, from John Legend to Ladysmith Black Mambazo. But his latest album is a throwback to his roots. The album called Shibin Queen is a tribute to his late grandmother. She supported her family with a small informal bar, or shibin, in Pretoria's Mamelodi Township in the 1960s and 70s. Mlasela says he wanted to recreate the songs he heard performed at his grandmother's bar, and to do so, he recorded Shibin Queen live, outdoors, and on the same street in Mamelodi where his grandmother once lived.
I dedicated this album to my late grandmother, Ida, who studied the Shibin. It's also a dedication to the music that was played then, which is the variety of styles of typical accent of South African music styles, Mbakanga, Marabi, Kwela, and Mbube.
Mlasela says his grandmother started brewing and selling beer to make ends meet after she was forcibly displaced from her previous home and settled in Mamelodi. At the time, South Africa was under the crush of apartheid. Mlasela says police would frequently raid the bar and arrest his grandmother. But despite the hardship, Mlasela says the bar was a place where working folks came together to find joy and relaxation, including in the music that spilled across the tables and into the street.
There were quite a lot of people coming from different places in Johannesburg, Pretoria, Durban, Malawi, Zimbabwe. So it was a place where my grandmother championed the social cohesion. And just like today, you know, like a barman, if you're a barman, you listen to quite a lot of people's stories, their plans, and then also when they are hurt, their sad stories, when they are happy. so my grandmother could also listen to all that.
One song inspired by such barroom tales is Ithemba Lami, a man's lament for the woman who left him. Mahlasela says the music of the Shabin is the music of South Africa. He hopes that his album can help raise the profile of those old styles and the artists who pioneered them.
You know, the music that was great of the Masatini and Aotela Queens, that's the sisters and everything, whatever. These were the people who were exporting our culture and our music outside South Africa to the States, to Europe and all that, championing our music. This is our typical sound that we need to pride ourselves with, just like Jamaica, where they have rubber-stamped reggae as their music and championed it. My drive here is to champion our accent and our own, you know, typical music.
Fittingly, one song on the album is called Mkulo, which is Xhosa for music.
The lyrics are saying music was there before we were born and the music is still here. Music makes the work to go smoothly and music takes away the boredom.
With the COVID-19 pandemic raging in South Africa and the world, there's plenty of boredom to go around as people stay in their homes. Mahlasela himself isn't going on tour just yet to promote the album, but he says he hopes these kinds of songs can once again bring some joy, just like they did at his grandmother's Shabin in Mamelodi.
Through this COVID-19, it has been really difficult for a lot of artists, you know, here in South Africa, musicians, and not only here in South Africa, everywhere. But I think this is the time whereby people need some kind of a relief in some way, some kind of entertainment, and then stories that will uplift them. And I think this album will do that.
Shabin Queen was released in August by ATO Records. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Bisi Manyana by Vusi Mlasela.
Basi manyana balela buroko. Basi manyana balela buroko.
Baribula isa hudisa, renare tuswa liki wa mahudi kepu.
Setuti siya makata hake shaba di taba di kwa hetu ki muhudi ka hote tong tong badisa tong ribe mo buke la mahomo basi manyana balle la boroko basi manyana.
We've been listening to Vusi Mlasela with the song Bisi Manyana. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, wear a mask when you're in public places, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Don't worry.
Don't